You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Welcome to MLB.com Extras, the San Diego Padres. I am Allison Footer from MLB.com, and I am here with my colleague, Corey Brock, who has been covering the Padres mercilessly for months and months now throughout the offseason. And, Corey, the last time we talked, we thought James Shields might be a nice addition to the Padres. And since then, the Padres apparently agreed on that. So, I've been kind of not suspicious, but a little bit reticent to really deem the Padres like these instant contenders at the top of the division. But just because I feel like, you know, as much as you upgrade offensively, even though they have a really good pitching staff, you really need to sort of complement that with pitching. Well, they did that. And so now you have to really look at this rotation and think this could be one of the best ones in the league. How do you see this whole rotation shaking out?
Yeah, and you know what's funny, Allison? You know, when they went into the winter, certainly the things they needed to address, and we've talked about this, I think items 1 through 10 and then maybe 10 through 20, you know, all had to do with upgrading the offense, which was woeful last year. It was the worst offense in baseball. So that was certainly where A.J. Preller's attention was early on, was upgrading the position player grouping and finding some productive bats. And, you know, I think all along maybe kind of keeping an eye open for a good value and someone who could help out the starting rotation, could provide some quality depth. You know, the old adage, you never finish with the same starting five that you begin with. And the nature of the game, 6 months, 162 games, injuries, underperformance, something always comes up. So, you know, I think they kind of kept an eye on the market and they kept an eye on Shields and certainly some developments as we've worked through December, as we've gotten into January and then gotten into February. And, you know, who knows exactly how much his value has slipped a little bit. I don't think it's anything has to do with James Shields himself. I understand that he's 33, but I think the Padres value this as a, you know, a top of the rotation guy that can eat up a lot of innings and hasn't shown any kind of signs of regression. So I think it was a good value signing for them, and it really bolsters that rotation and sets them up in a pretty good way for 2015, especially with the guys they had coming back.
Yeah, I mean, you touched on that, and that's really where James Shields' value comes through. I mean, it's the durability. This big game James nickname that he has is, you know, I just don't, it's unfortunate that that's continuing on because it's really just like very reliable James. Since 2011, he's first among all starting pitchers with innings pitched. So that's really what you need. And yes, he's 33, and yes, you're basically, I mean, when it comes to free agents of any kind, you're basically paying them for what they did, and you know what they're going to do is much less certain. So, as his price came down, I mean, the Padres did seem to be kind of a perfect fit. And I really like Bud Black's his comments. Basically, he made a while ago, the strength of your club is going to be who can, you know, innings pitched in your starting rotation. And if you have five guys that pitch close to 1,000 innings combined, then you're probably going to go to the playoffs. So they have to feel, and Bud Black has to be looking at this now and saying, okay, we have a real shot at this.
Yeah, not just innings, but, you know, quality innings. And, you know, obviously there's going to be some regression in his game. I hate to break this to everyone, but as we get older, we start to slip a little bit. Not you, Allison, of course. But
of course not.
but, you know, it's going to happen. Now, no one knows when it's going to happen, but, you know, with these deals now, you know, I don't think teams are really looking at these long-term deals. And this isn't really a long one, if you think about it. 4 years is not a considerable deal for them in terms of impact on their payroll and all that. You know, it is a substantial sticker. But, you know, I think they've kind of given up on looking at the back end of this and realized that, like, if he performs to what his capabilities are, at least in those first 2 years of the deal, and then maybe tread water that third year, fourth year, whatever, then, you know, he's going to perform up to that contract. And especially with Ian Kennedy, he's going to be a free agent after this year. This gives you a little bit of dependability moving into 2016. And I think one of the constants we've seen in these moves that A.J. Preller has made is, aside from Justin Upton and Sean Kelly, a reliever they picked up, these guys are all cost-controlled beyond 2015. So while these appear to be go-for-it-now moves, you know, these aren't necessarily win now moves. You know what I mean? It's like they feel like this is something they can sustain. And with Shields, he gives you a little bit of assurance that this guy's going to be around.
It's interesting that you say that there are a lot of cost-effective moves because their payroll is actually very high, a record, around $105 million, which is the most they've ever spent. So, you know, is that? I mean, do they feel like they'd be able to maintain that, or this is a realistic thing, that they're not going to have to start maybe shedding salary down the road, or are they pretty comfortable with that kind of number?
Yeah, I think so. And I think, you know, they'll have some money coming off the books next year. You know, Carlos Quinton. He's in the final year of his deal, so he'll be able to shed a little bit of payroll, and some of that Kemp money really kicks in next year. So they would like to grow the payroll from year to year, whether that's most likely kind of incrementally as they move along. You know, that 105 figure, and it was $90 million last year on opening day, that still places you in the bottom third of major league teams, but you know, they feel like they're making some inroads in that department. You know, they're doing a lot of general improvements at the stadium. They're putting in one of these monster scoreboards, score screens that you could see from outer space. They're doing a lot of stadium upgrades. You know, with the TV deals the way they are now, Allison, there's a lot of money in the game, and I think the Padres are benefiting from that, and they're turning around, and they're spending a lot of that on payroll. So, pretty heady time to be a Padres fan right now, and it's so uncommon. We haven't seen anything quite like this before. Not just, you know, what A.J. Preller's doing, but really the expectation level that's sort of been set for these guys moving forward.
Well, no doubt. And, of course, with all the additions to this team, we do have to remember that there are guys who were on this team before. And you had an interesting article recently just about some of the players that might have to maybe step up, and some of the familiar faces that have been on the team for a while that either need to continue to produce or maybe have a little bit more of a comeback year, a breakout year. Who should we be keeping our eyes on mostly of that group?
Yeah. For as much as we talk about the new guys, and rightfully so, I mean, it's a pretty exciting topic, Upton, Kemp, Norris, Myers. You know, if the Padres are really going to make some headway in the West this year, you know, they're going to need some bounce back years from a couple of guys. Jed Jerko is a big one. Second baseman, had a big rookie year 2 years ago, 23 home runs, certainly a lot of offensive production for a middle infielder. I was bothered by the plantar fasciitis last year, came back from the DL eventually, was a little bit better. You know, I think he's, he felt like there was a burden to kind of carry the offense a little bit. And I think that was problematic, Allison, of, you know, a lineup that just didn't really have a whole lot of functioning parts in terms of run producers. You had a lot of guys hitting out of place because, you know, it's one of those deals where someone has to hit third, someone has to hit fourth. I mean, you have to make out the lineup card. So, you know, I think he felt a little bit of pressure. He signed a big contract last year, but I think he'll be better this year. Yonder Alonso, the first baseman, you know, another guy, had 39 doubles a couple of years ago for the Padres. He's been injured a little bit, but they need a bounce back year from him. You may see a platoon situation with Will Middlebrooks. We'll play some third base as well. Will Venable had a nice year a couple years ago. So, you know, again, you know, the notable additions are wonderful. They really are, and they will certainly help, and the Padres will score far more runs than they scored last year. But, you know, unless these other guys, the holdovers, unless they make some improvements from where they were last year, you know, I won't say it goes all for naught, but it's going to be still hard for this team to work their way north in the standings.
And I noticed that there's a new addition to the team in the front office area. That's Moises Alou. This is so cool. I guess Mark Pryor and Moises Alou are both working for the Padres. Moises being a special assistant to player development. I don't think a lot of people know that Alou down in the Dominican Republic has been a general manager of one of the winter league teams down there. A general manager of one of the World Baseball Classic teams, but he's pretty savvy on the baseball business side, and he's had to, you know, really work to get players to play down there, and then he's had to do some firings and some hirings, so he's pretty experienced, and I guess he was ready to sort of get back in it up here, and that's got to be kind of a nice addition for the organization.
Yeah, especially for a guy that's going to be working with a lot of younger players and a lot of younger Latin players, and I think his experience, I think he has a whole lot to share, with guys in the system, and I think it's such a wonderful addition. And, you know, it's funny, I was talking to Mark Pryor, and of course we've we were joking about, you know, that the 03 Cubs there with Alou and,
right,
and Bartman and all that. It was just, it was such a natural fit. But, you know, he mentioned that how big Alou was for him, you know, as a young player. You know, remember now, Pryor, 21, 22 years old back then, and really gravitated toward Alou, who kind of took him under his wing and, you know, kind of learned a lot from him, saw how he went about his business, and just was a, it really counted him as being a quality teammate. And I'm sure there's a lot of people throughout the game who feel the same way. So I think, you know, the Padres looking at that feel like, you know, this guy's got an awful lot to share. Maybe this is an entry point for him to get a little bit more involved domestically here in the United States and in a front office, and maybe there's some upward mobility there. So we'll see where this all sort of goes, but it's certainly a nice entry point for him. And like you said, he's been very busy and a very challenging position that he was in. So this, I think this will be a welcome change for him.
So spring training's coming up. You're getting ready to head out. And do you have a different feeling? I mean, you know, as a reporter, you go and it's an objective business, and you're just, you know, you're going to, it's a very long process to get through spring training. There's a lot of writing, and it's an everyday, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning kind of schedule. But do you have a different feeling going to this now? Like, oh my goodness, like this is going to be a lot more interesting than maybe it has in the past just to cover this team.
Yeah, a little bit. It's going to be interesting, I think, to kind of watch the, how the team is covered by others. I mean, really, the, you know, the component of my job, it doesn't change whether, you know, regardless of who's in the clubhouse. And, you know, there's always interesting stories to write. I think maybe there'll be a little bit more, there'll be newer stories because, you know, there's newer guys. There's so much turnover. You could have 11 different guys on the opening day roster than they had last year. And that's, we, you know, again, you just don't see that. So, yeah, I think there's going to be an uptick in the energy. I think, you know, a lot of people are going to be having their eyes on the Padres. It's already happened. I don't mean just here in San Diego, but kind of, you know, across the country. Like, again, the old adage, or one I've kind of been running into the ground, Allison, is, you know, they become relevant without playing a single game. So now the next step, of course, is for them to get it all figured out on the field, and that's what 6 weeks in Arizona does for you. And one of the things you're going to have to do is, you know, to broker some team chemistry. And I know a lot of people kind of chuckle at that a little bit when people bring that up. But, you know, a lot of the things we don't see that goes on, you know, behind closed doors, you know, with the manager and, you know, is sort of building that camaraderie, especially with so many new guys. I think that's going to be absolutely critical for this group moving forward because, you know, you always hear about those bad clubhouses, right, where guys don't get along and how that could be a detriment to the final product. And I think the Padres don't envision that happening. But, you know, they want to make sure they got everything squared away there because you have so many different people coming from so many different places. So, you know, I think that's going to be something they're going to work on a lot in spring. And, yeah, but it's setting up to be a pretty exciting spring training for them and certainly moving into the regular season.
You ever notice that the bad clubhouses and the bad chemistry, it's always bad teams? You never have, like, some 102-win team that people are like, oh, but it's a bad clubhouse.
Yeah, exactly. Like, wouldn't it just be kind of, well, I shouldn't say cool, but, like, if you have this amazing team and, like, no one in there talk to each other.
Exactly. Like, the early 70s A's, Phil Garner said that they used to just beat each other up in a clubhouse. There were fights all the time, and they were, you know, perennial winners. So that was such just an anomaly, like that you just, that wasn't like a bad clubhouse. It's just kind of how they express themselves. But for the most part, like, you know, you have good teams, you have guys that like each other.
Yeah, and they could get away with it back then. There was no Twitter, right?
Exactly. There were no phones on camera or cameras on phones and all that other stuff that we as the media have ruined the lives of professional athletes everywhere.
Amen.
Yeah. Well, Corey, thank you. Safe travels, and we'll catch up with you in Arizona.
Visit the official online shop of Major League Baseball at MLB.com/shop for the largest selection of authentic caps, T-shirts, jerseys, hoodies, collectibles, and more. Get your gear straight from the source, the MLB.com shop.